This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, once again, sports fans. This is Dana Augusta once again for week 6 of the Historically Speaking NFL Matchups, where we once again highlight the best of pro football from back in the day. And if you are returning, welcome back, and you already know what we do here on these mini episodes. Those of you, however, that are new, we examine 3 games that are on the NFL schedule that are rematches of famous games from years past. And this is our way of getting you ready for the NFL action for the weekend. 3 games that we are talking about in this week's episode are very memorable in their own way. One of them is a playoff game from the early 1990s that featured possibly the most memorable touchdown run in this Hall of Fame running back's career, and this team's first postseason win in over 30 years. We'll also talk about another playoff game, this one from the 1970s, that saw this team, led by a charismatic head coach, finally lead his team to a Super Bowl after several disappointing finishes. The third game is perhaps one of the most famous regular season games ever. To give you an idea of how famous this game was, you have to take this into account. The coach of the losing team stated afterwards, quote, "What a nightmare. It was the worst experience of my coaching career. We're all ashamed for our people, for our fans, and for our organization," end quote. The loss was so catastrophic for this Hall of Fame coach that he was fired the next week and he never coached again. So that is what's going on here in this NFL historical matchups for week 6 edition of the Historically Speaking Sports Podcast, where we talk about the best of sports from back in the day. It was the headline game of the divisional round weekend during the 1991 NFC playoffs. Yet this game was not at Candlestick Park or RFK Stadium or even the Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey. No. The late game on Sunday, January 5th, 1992, the game everyone wanted to see was being played in all places, the Pontiac Silverdome. The Detroit Lions, in the playoffs for the first time since 1983, was looking to do something that hadn't been done since 1957, and that is to win a postseason game. The Lions, under head coach Wayne Fonts, directed the Lions to a 12-4 record, which included not only the NFC Central Division title, but the number 2 seed in the NFC playoffs. Fonts was also named that year's NFL Coach of the Year. The team was led offensively by running back Barry Sanders and rookie wide receiver Herman Moore, who was joined on the outside by another great young wide receiver at the time, Brett Perryman. Yet the question mark all season for the Lions was at quarterback. Rodney Peete, Andre Ware, and Eric Kramer all spent time at quarterback during the year. Kramer would emerge as the starter after Peete went down with an injury during the regular season. But the Lions, who battled inconsistency all season, found inspiration through adversity. In a Week 12 game against the Los Angeles Rams, offensive guard Mike Utley was lost for the remainder of the season with a career-ending spinal injury. As he was being carted off the field, he gave the capacity crowd at the Silverdome a thumbs up that sparked the Lions into the postseason. Their opponents that afternoon were the Dallas Cowboys, who, the week before, defeated the Chicago Bears for the first postseason win in the Jimmy Johnson era in Big D. Yet the Cowboys had their own quarterback controversy. The opening day starter, Troy Aikman, had gone down with an injury earlier in the season. The backup, Steve Beuerlein, came in and led the team to the playoffs. Beuerlein has started in the wildcard win over Chicago, and the Cowboys head coach named him the starter for this game as well. With the date with the Washington Redskins and the NFC Championship game on the line, the headline of this game would be the matchup of the two of the NFL's most exciting running backs, Barry Sanders for the Lions and Emmitt Smith of the Cowboys. Also, this game has a little bit of trivia. This game was the first divisional round in NFL postseason history to take place indoors. First ever divisional round playoff game indoors. From the very beginning of the game, the Lions were dominant. Since the Lions knew Dallas would be focusing on stopping Barry Sanders and the running game. But Detroit switched it up a little on Dallas and decided to go with the passing game and quarterback Eric Kramer. And Dallas was not prepared. After the Cowboys went 3-and-out on their first drive, Kramer drove the Lions downfield and scored on a 31-yard touchdown pass to Willie Green to take a 7-0 lead. The drive took just 5 plays, and all of them were passes. Before the end of the quarter, Dallas would get on the board with a 28-yard field goal by Ken Willis. In the second quarter, the Lions' defense came up big as defensive back Mel Jenkins intercepted a Steve Beuerlein pass and raced 41 yards for a touchdown to give the Lions a 14-3 lead. The Lions and the Cowboys would exchange field goals as Detroit would hold a 17-6 lead at intermission. In the second half, Kramer, who would finish with 341 yards passing, would find Willie Green again for his second score of the game, this time from 9 yards out to extend the Lions' lead to 24-6. And for all intents and purposes, the game was essentially over. Right before the half, Johnson would replace Beuerlein with Troy Aikman, but made little difference, as the Lions' defense completely shut down the Dallas offense. But the game's signature moment came in the fourth, with the game well in hand and the Lions went to their running game and, of course, Barry Sanders. On a sweep play to the right side, Sanders bounced backwards off of several Dallas defenders. As they all went down to the ground, there were several Cowboys that were just standing around the pile, unaware that Sanders was still on his feet. After bouncing off defenders, he made one move to juke Cowboy linebacker Ken Norton out of his shoes and then ran 47 yards for a touchdown to put the finishing touches on one of the greatest games in Lions history. Detroit's 38-6 win marked their first postseason win since 1957 and the only playoff win in the Silver Dome. The next week, the Lions' dream of a Super Bowl would inevitably fall short, as they would lose to the eventual Super Bowl champion Washington Redskins 41-10 in D.C. During the decade of the 1970s, the NFL's most physical and intense rivalry took place in the AFC between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Oakland Raiders. After the Raiders defeated them in the 1973 playoffs, the Steelers would go through the Raiders in the previous two AFC Championship games to reach Super Bowls 9 and 10. For the third consecutive year, the Steelers and Raiders met in the AFC Championship game on December 26, 1976. The Raiders, coached by the great John Madden, were coming off of a thrilling 24-21 last-second win over the New England Patriots the week before. Meanwhile, the Steelers blew out the Colts in the AFC divisional round, 40-14, but the win was costly as running backs Rocky Blyer and Franco Harris were both injured in that game and were not available for the Raiders offense and the Steelers offense, and the Raiders took full advantage. With the Raiders holding a 3-0 lead, Oakland linebacker Willie Hall intercepted a Terry Bradshaw pass and returned it to the Steeler 1-yard line. On the very next play, Raiders running back Clarence Davis ran over right tackle and scored on a 1-yard touchdown to give them a 10-0 lead. The Steelers would respond on the next series. A couple of big pass completions to Lynn Swann led to Reggie Harrison's 3-yard touchdown run to get on the scoreboard. With the Raiders holding a 10-7 lead, they put together a long, methodical drive of themselves, going 69 yards on 14 plays, mostly on the ground. With 19 seconds remaining in the first half, Stabler connected with tight end Warren Bankston for a 4-yard touchdown pass on play action, giving the Raiders a 17-7 lead at the half. In the second half, it was more of the same for the Raiders, keeping the ball on the ground and away from the struggling Steeler offense. Coming out of halftime, the Raiders went on another long and methodical drive, this time 12 plays for 63 yards. The key play in the drive was a 28-yard completion from Stabler to Cliff Branch. The drive concluded with a 5-yard touchdown pass from Stabler to Pete Banaszak to put the game out of reach. Now, without a threat of a running attack and hopelessly behind, it was up to Bradshaw to rally the Steelers, but it was not meant to be. The Raiders controlled the game and defeated the Steelers 24-7 to return to the Super Bowl for the first time since losing to Green Bay in Super Bowl II. And the Raiders would go on to blast the Minnesota Vikings in Super Bowl XI 32-14 for their first ever Super Bowl win. Now, you know it's bad when a losing streak goes on for so long that late-night talk show hosts take shots at you on a nightly basis. And that was the case in the fall of 1977, when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, in their second season of operation, were still looking for their first win in franchise history. The Bucs' string of futility went on for so long and became so famous that the king of late night, Johnny Carson, frequently mocked the team on The Tonight Show. On his show, he would play a character named Karnak the Magnificent, who was a psychic, and the skit was that he would get a sealed envelope from his co-host Ed McMahon. Inside the envelope would be a question, and he predicts the answer to that question as he would hold the envelope against his turban that he was wearing, then open the envelope to reveal the question. For example, he would hold the envelope against his head and say, "Gatorade." Then open the letter and read the question. What does an alligator receive if it's on government assistance? You know, stuff like that. So, he got this one envelope and held it up against his magic turban, closed his eyes and answered, "The RMS Titanic and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers." He opened and read, "What are two disasters that are accompanied by band music?" It was that bad. By December of 1977, the losing streak had reached an improbable 26 consecutive games for the Buccaneers, and teams were fearful of being the first team to lose to the Bucs, and the teams prepared as if they were playing a Super Bowl contender. The Dallas Cowboys quarterback Roger Staubach said once, "We didn't want to be the first. Psychologically, it would have wrecked our season." John McVay, then the coach of the New York Giants and the father of current Los Angeles Rams coach Sean McVay, said after their Week 9 win over Tampa Bay, "In 25 years of coaching, I've never had as much pressure on me as I did this week. It certainly looked as if the losing streak would continue until the near future." In the second to last week of the season, fittingly Week 13, the Buccaneers traveled to New Orleans and faced the Saints in the Superdome. And even though the Saints heading into that game were 3-9, they were installed as an 11-point favorites to keep the Bucs in the losing column. And adding insult to injury, of the 12 losses they suffered to this point in the season, Tampa Bay were shut out in 6 of them, including 3 of their last 4 games. To add motivation to his squad, Buccaneers head coach John McKay read the team an article which Saints quarterback Archie Manning stated that it would be quote-unquote disgraceful to lose to Tampa Bay. And inspired by Manning's statements, Tampa Bay did not allow the Saints to get a first down until midway in the second quarter and didn't get past midfield until nearly the end of the first half. Meanwhile, the Buccaneers began their first 5 drives in Saints territory, leading to a pair of Dave Green field goals. In the second quarter, Bucs quarterback Gary Huff connected with Morris Owens on a 5-yard touchdown pass, extending their lead to 13-0 at intermission. In the third quarter, Tampa Bay broke the game open as defensive back Mike Washington intercepted Manning and ran 45 yards for a touchdown to make the score 20-0. In the fourth, Manning continued to struggle and relinquished another pick six, this time to Richard Wood, and returned it 10 yards to extend Tampa's lead to 26-0. The Bucs' defense would victimize the Saints' offense one last time as Greg Johnson recovered a fumble in the end zone to seal the 33-14 win, Tampa's first in franchise history, ending the 0-26 start. Saints coach and future Hall of Famer Hank Stram was so outraged at the defeat of his that he allegedly ordered the game film burned. In the post-game press conference, Stram lamented, "What a nightmare. It was the worst experience of my coaching career. We're all ashamed for our people, for our fans, and for our organization." Stram was fired the next week, and he never coached again. Ironically, Stram was an early head coaching candidate for the expansion Buccaneers. Meanwhile, the jubilant Buccaneers traveled back to Central Florida for the first time in his history, victorious. It was the greatest victory in the world. "This is a habit I could really get accustomed to," Coach McKay joked through a megaphone standing on top of a parked car to a crowd of 8,000 celebrating fans around team headquarters. They gathered to greet the team 2 hours before the team plane arrived from New Orleans. The crowd caused the police to close down streets around the facility. The winning would continue for Tampa Bay as the next week, the Bucs would secure their first home win in franchise history, beating the then St. Louis Cardinals 17-7 at Tampa Stadium. The team in the next few years would continue to improve, climaxing in their appearance in the 1979 NFC Championship game against the Los Angeles Rams. And folks, that will do it for the Week 6 edition of the Historically Speaking NFL Matchups mini episode. Thanks once again for listening. We'll try to come out with these mini episodes every week during the NFL regular season, highlighting great and memorable games from the long history of the National Football League. So just keep your eye out for new episodes coming your way every weekend. And as usual, this podcast comes to you from the Bill King Memorial Studio in the sports wing of TM4 Enterprises, located in suburban Atlanta in the shadow of Stone Mountain. To get more content of the Historically Speaking Sports Podcast, you can check us out on Twitter X at HistoricallySP2, or you can send us a line at historically.speaking.sports@gmail.com. And if you have not done so already, please, please subscribe to the show. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, hell, tell a passerby on the street if you think they like sports history. And until next time, stay blessed, stay cool, and be your best at everything you do. It'll make this world a much, much better place.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, and I'm the host of the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. This podcast is based on stories, events, and characters from my book called When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL, which was written shortly after the Cardinals won their last championship in 1947, or so it seems. The reason for this message is twofold. First, to share the great news that the second edition of the book has just been released by McFarland Publishers. And all Sports History Network listeners can now enter a special Sports History Network contest for the opportunity to win one of two free copies of When Football Was Football. We'll be happy to include a personal inscription in each winner's book and then send it out to you with our best wishes. The new book contains about 80 more pages than the original, almost all new archival photos, additions within all chapters based on new research, and an update on the players, coaches, and administrators mentioned in the book. It's everything you ever wanted to know about the early Cardinals, as well as the NFL itself. To enter this free giveaway, go to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you.